ALBOP.com.
School is back. Do you need an after-school program for your young one? The Words Beats and Life Academy is enrolling for students from third grade up to young adults, with programming weekdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m., offering classes in hip-hop performing and visual arts, as well as business and arts leadership, with access to professional teaching artists, equipment, and resources. Located in Columbia Heights, Northwest Washington, D.C. at St. Stephen's Church. Classes are always free. Enrollment at wblinc.org/academy, based on availability. The fall session begins September 9th. We hope to see you or your young one there at the Words Beats and Life After School Academy.
All right, all right.
Remember, wblinc.org/academy.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
With the finger roll, plus the foul.
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day, or Oscar Robertson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
He's Atan Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW, trying to change this world. One broadcast at a time, going old school today. Atan Thomas, 10-year NBA veteran, author, speaker, poet, man about town. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Tell the audience, if you can, whom we have as a guest at the bottom of the hour at 10:30.
Yes, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Captain Sonia Pruitt, formerly of Montgomery, Captain of Police Department. She has a program called the Black Experience. She's a phenomenal interview. So I'm really looking forward to speaking with her. And one of the things that she does is she gives a different perspective of a different aspect of police officers. So you heard the FOP endorse Trump. She has different perspectives. So definitely looking forward to talking to her at the bottom of the hour.
And of course, the impetus for getting Officer Pruitt on the show was last week we spent so much time talking about how police responded to Tyreek Hill, mm-hmm. the Miami Dolphins wide receiver being pulled over and accosted in a very violent fashion. His teammate, Calais Campbell, handcuffed and also written up, and all sorts of controversy and questions coming out of that incident. I'd love to talk to Officer Pruitt if anything positive could possibly come out of this, or if this is just yet another instance we have to chalk up to, you know, what else can you call it? Driving while black.
Right.
It's serious stuff, but I'm hoping that Officer Pruitt can give us a perspective to understand what's the way forward after something like this happens in such a public manner. So we'll see about that. So looking forward to talking to her. So anything new in your life you want to share before we jump on the political plane that we always go on here?
I mean, there's so much going on politically that we could just jump right into it. Where do you want to start?
Well, first, a very quick word about the retirement of Adrian Wojnarowski, the master of the Woj bomb, NBA reporter, the person who is known for putting out breaking news on social media at a moment's notice. The only thing I wanted to say about him, Matan, because a lot of people are speaking about his retirement, which nobody saw coming, to be the general manager over at St. Bonaventure's basketball. That's his alma mater. I never thought about him too much, but I love the moment when Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri was trying to get all kinds of hay, writing about how the NBA hates police officers. He relates to our interview at the bottom of the hour, because players are dare raising dissent, and how the NBA is in bed with China, as if Josh Hawley's not in bed with China. Give me a break. And he sent to Woj his whole press release, hoping to get comment from Woj, hoping Woj would drop it online. And Woj just hit him back with an expletive, like a big old expletive that I couldn't say on the air in a million years. Josh Hawley tried to publicize. He was like, look how the NBA's reporters talk to me. And all it really did was make Woj kind of a legend, because nobody likes them some Josh Hawley. So I just wanted to relay that story.
There you go.
Yeah. Just a little credit on that. So it has been a crazy week, Atan. The thing that has struck me most sharply, and we're going to go to this to talk about athletes and endorsements, is this horrific way that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have decided to turn Springfield, Ohio, into a center of organizing of anti-immigrant and particularly anti-Haitian hate, spreading lies about the Haitian people who live there, the Haitian immigrants, spreading lies that they're in this country illegally, of course, spreading lies most infamously that they are stealing and eating pets. I mean, we're talking like old school racist. How do we drum up a almost Tulsa style race riot against these people who are just trying to live their lives? And the town has come forward to say none of this is true. The mayor has come forward to say to the candidates, don't come to our town, please. You know, we have enough troubles. Proud Boys, Nazis marching in the streets of Springfield. The community doesn't want it there. It's all based on lies. And Trump just said yesterday he was going to go to Springfield for a rally. J.D. Vance represents Ohio, and this is how he treats the people who live in his own state. I mean, I'm sorry. First of all, these are horrible people for doing this to the Haitian community, for doing this to the community of Springfield, Ohio. But what does it say to you about politics in this country that they see this as, you know, a way towards victory?
Well, this is the same playbook that Trump did before. I mean, he's giving people a targeted demographic, someone to hate, someone to fear. That's his playbook. I mean, if anybody that watched the last debate, that was probably the most unprepared that I have seen someone at an actual presidential debate that I can really remember. And he repeated this talking point that the immigrants are coming to get you. That's basically what it was. He repeated it maybe, what do you think, 7 to 10 times? Yeah. He just kept saying it over and over again, because that's what he wants to do, to stoke this fear. It's fear mongering. And it's so ridiculous and so far out there of a claim. But there are people who take that to heart, and he knows the power of his words. So what happened after the debates was there were bomb threats. There were Haitian community events that had to be shut down because of threats of violence. Mm-hmm. There are you know, people who are targeting different Haitian people that live in the community. So all of this stuff happened, and it's not like he didn't know that was going to happen. He did it for a reason, and really to be able to it's interesting, because this is what I want to see is how this plays out into how many people continue to believe this, although it's been debunked over and over and over again by officials, by, you know, statisticians, by everyone.
But the Republican governor of Ohio?
Yes, even the Republican governor has debunked it.
Who's super right-wing guy, by the way. He's no, like, centrist or anything.
Yeah, but the fact that they heard Trump say it, there's still a demographic, there's still a, and I don't know how large of a percentage, but there's still a certain demographic that is still going to hold on to that, and it's going to drive them more. And that's the dangerous part. That's the dangerous part.
No, it is a danger. And it makes me also think of the decision yesterday by the Teamsters Union to not endorse Kamala Harris. And Tim Walz, when Biden and Harris, they saved the Teamster pension fund in the last 4 years. You know, Donald Trump is for a right to work country, not just right to work states, which would make it near impossible for unions to successfully organize. And here's the president of the Teamsters. He speaks at the Republican convention. The Democratic convention says, yeah, that's fine. We don't necessarily need you here. The Teamsters reject. They say we're not going to endorse either party, which to me is a great victory for racism, a great victory for Trump. You know, this is the first time the Teamsters haven't endorsed a Democrat in eons. And it's hard to look at this and not think that this has to do with Kamala Harris's race and gender as being a part of this. With the Teamsters being a majority white workforce in the Teamsters. I think it's like 60%. Or maybe it's just the president still mad of the Teamsters, Sean O'Brien, upset that he wasn't asked to speak at the Democratic convention. And this is his give back, his smack back to them. But it's very ugly that they chose not to. And it only relates to the Haitian issue with me is because it's like, what are you voting for? Are you voting because what you think is like a racial interest, like whiteness, you're voting for whiteness? Or are you going to vote for people who are going to try to stand up for your pension and your paycheck? The same way, are you going to vote for someone who lies about Haitian immigrants and what they're bringing to a community, just straight up lies about how Haitian immigrants have actually revived Springfield, Ohio, economically? Or are you going to say, you know what, the mere fact that they exist in Ohio, even if they left, it would decimate the economy of the city. But the mere fact that they exist there is enough for me to vote for the person who's promising to deport you, even though you are here legally.
Well, that's the thing about the narrative. The narrative doesn't have to be drowning in facts for a lot of Trump supporters. It just has to be a narrative that they can hold on to. And they can point back to something that Trump said. And that's what makes it so dangerous. But you have different organizations that then support what Trump said. And that's why, it's good for, you know, Captain Sonia Pruitt to come, because what she's doing with the Black Police Experience, she has created a Black Cops for Kamala. And she's going to explain exactly why she feels that it is important to show that there is a demographic of the police force that aren't, you know, doing what the FOP are doing. You know, I mean, and it is important to show that. And I think that one of the things that we're going to see, because I don't really see this issue going away, because it seems to be the top of, you know, Trump's issue as far as the fear mongering. How far it spreads, you know. I mean, it's really a dangerous thing, because it's not just going to stop there. It's going to, and I would be interesting. We'd have to have somebody look up the stats of where, you know, threats against the Haitian community have now happened all throughout the country. And I've seen different things posted, but it'd be interesting to see that uptick since those debates. And that's the part that's really scary.
It is scary. And J.D. Vance is saying things that have also been debunked, where he said, OK, maybe the pets thing wasn't true. But he said this thing where he said sometimes you have to make up stories to get people to pay attention to an issue. He did say that. And, you know, I wouldn't accept that from my children. Right. The idea that we would accept that from a vice president of the United States or a senator of the United States is absolutely obscene. Absolutely obscene. So when he says making up stories, I mean, if that becomes acceptable, like in politics, and it seems like it already has, frankly, but yeah. If people don't stand up to it and say this is not allowed, I mean, they'll just make up stories about anything to achieve what their objectives are, even if they're not based in truth. And if we're doing that, forget about it. You know, like this is no longer a workable country in any way other than autocracy or dictatorship, where you just make up whatever the heck you want. But after he said that about, he said, like, for example, like maybe there's no, you know, people eating cats or anything, but since we're talking about it, let's talk about the rise of communicable diseases, HIV, tuberculosis in the community, and how that is a result of Haitian immigration. Well, this writer, Greg Sargent, said, okay, used to write for the Washington Post, now writes for the New Republic, said, okay, we can't take anything this guy says as truth. You know, that's where we are. So I'm going to call all the health officials in Springfield and just ask them if that's true. None of it's true. HIV rate down in Springfield. The number of tuberculosis cases in the last 5 years on average has gone up by one person on average in Springfield. So again, it's like to have to fact check a politician about the most basic things. I mean, we've always known we've had to do that with Trump, but you see the way it metastasizes and spreads as something that somehow is okay. And I'm sorry, but it gives me a lot of bad thoughts, memories, whatever you want to call them, fears about the ways in which Holocausts, and I use the plural on Holocausts, have been perpetrated historically, because not just my people, not just Jewish people have been victimized by a Holocaust. It has occurred in several situations historically. That's just a fact. But in all those situations, they lay groundwork about issues like disease, about issues like the other, you know, the outsider, the person bringing harm, the enemy within. That's a phrase Trump uses now all the time. And it's just very scary that they are trying to articulate a worldview and bringing them into this worldview that all that matters is seeing a fake enemy destroyed, not trying to build us all up for a common good.
But that has been his playbook. That the thing is, this is not new for Trump. This is what he does. And this is what he did last time. And the thing about it is, you know, he termed it as being unfair to him that the moderators were fact-checking him. Because he doesn't want the facts to be out there. He wants to just be able to go and pontificate and say whatever he wants to say, no matter if it's true or not, because he knows that there are people who are going to believe it. So then he just wants to just continue putting out lies, continue just making things up. And that's the basis of his campaign. And unfortunately, it worked last time. I don't see how it's possible that it could work again, but we've seen this happen before. And yes. We've seen it happen throughout history before. And fear is a very powerful thing. You know, it could be completely against someone's interest, but when you have the fear that is created, whether it's a real fear or a made up fear, that does move people. And where it moves people beyond just a vote, this is the thing where certain people are preparing for something else. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Some people are preparing for an election, others are preparing for something else. And that's the part that, and we talked about this before, there's just a different aura that's around this election, and it's drummed up by specifically, you know, the Trump campaign and Donald Trump himself. And that's the aim that he's trying to do. But I know we gotta take a break real quick, and I do want to get your thoughts on some of these athlete endorsements. And I do want to get your thoughts on Brittany Mahomes, and I do want to get your thoughts on the Taylor Swift effect and all of that. So can we take a quick break and come right back, and we could hear some of your thoughts on these athletes' endorsements. We could be right back on The Collision, where sports and politics collide.
We used to be number 10. Now we permanent in one. In the battle, lost my finger. Mike became my arm. Pistol nozzle, it's nasal. Blood becomes lukewarm. Tell them, oh, mommy, easy now. Squeeze this arm.
fun. Test why cleft, see that flesh get scorned. So bad, make me feel like you ain't wanting to be born, John. Tell your friends they the hell out of my lawn. Chicken George became dead George, stealing chicken from my farm.
Yeah.
Another dead pigeon. If you are my theosis, then I'm bringing all hatred to Cecilia. Nobody shoot me. My body's made a hand grenade. Girl bled to death while she was tunkus in the razor blade. That sounds sick, maybe one day I'll write the horror. Blackula comes to the ghetto, Jackson Acura. Stevie Wonder sees crack babies. Becoming enemies in their own families. I'ma get them come, you know what we soon done. Gun by my side just in case I got the rum. A boy on the side of Babylon trying to front like you're down with Mount Zion.
Yeah. On flat spoons, take no shorts like poo-poos. See Gucci's, buy Gucci's for Gucci's and Lucci. Find me in my Mitsubishi, eating sushi, bumping Fuji. Hey, 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 try to take the crew and we don't play, play. Say, 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 like Paul McCartney, not hardly on. Look it up, I can see right through your bluff. They get huffed and they puff, but they can't handle us. We bust, cause we fortified. I could never hide.
Wow, we are back here on The Collision, where sports and politics collide. That is one of my all-time favorite tracks, and I have a feeling I know why you chose it to be played, but I'll let you have the floor here.
Of course, that's the Haitian connection. Why, Cliff?
There you go.
We had to play that. That was perfect. But I do want to ask you. I want to ask you about Brittany Mahomes. It was interesting. It was interesting because she had this Trump endorsement, right? And then she saw how Trump reacted and responded to Taylor Swift, right? So last mm-hmm. weekend, if everybody didn't see, Trump just tweeted or post whatever on that other site. What's that other site called? I don't know what it's called.
I don't know what it's called.
You know what I'm talking about. Truth something. But
Truth posted, Social.
Truth Social. There we go. He posted, you know, I hate Taylor Swift in all caps. like a little kid. You
wow.
know? And so the funny part, though, was seeing some of the reaction, and I know we'll take it, you know what I mean? But it's interesting seeing Brittany Mahomes, you know, that was the turning point for her.
Mm-hmm.
for, you know, not all the list of other things that we could list that Trump has said and done and planned, especially that affect women, especially that affect, you know, NFL players, you know,
yeah.
where she said they're scum, these are all the people she rubs elbows with, you know? I mean, those didn't move the needle for her, but this here, you know, with Taylor Swift, that was the point. So now she's switched. But let's talk about that and what you saw from that.
Well, first of all, Etan, it's almost like a parody of what we say, where nobody really cares when you have a despot or a bigot like Trump. No one really cares until it affects you. Like if you're not Mexican and it's 2015. Oh, he called all Mexicans rapists and criminals. Oh, well, I'm not Mexican. All right, whatever. And then it's like, you saw this in the NFL, honestly. Like I've talked with people like Colin Kaepernick and Kenny Stills about this, where they had such a tough time in 2016 getting other NFL players to take a knee against police brutality and for Black lives. But then in 2017, after Trump called all the NFL players SOBs, then it was like, whoa, oh, he's talking about us now? Oh, and then all the players and all the franchise owners, they're all taking a knee. And, you know, as a lot of these guys have said to me, they said, you know, a lot of them weren't even taking a knee around police brutality or Black lives. They were taking a knee to stand up for the NFL, for themselves. You know, and that's just one example. And probably I'm only using that example because it's sports. It's not even they're not alone in that in the slightest in terms of people who've ignored a lot of Trump's awfulness. But then when it affects them or their community or somebody they're married to or some way, shape or form, then all of a sudden it's like, my God, the bigotry. I had no idea. And I said it's like a parody of that because it's one thing to say, whoa, I'm married to a Haitian person. Now you're going after my family. That where you're just like, come on, You couldn't care when it was other people. That's one thing. But to say, whoa, you just attacked Taylor Swift. Now you're on my territory, you know, and now you're coming into my house and bringing this hate because you attacked a billionaire pop star, the most famous woman in the world. Oh, no, now you're on my turf. So there's something about that that's like I said, like a parody, like a satire. Like, it's so incredibly lame that one would support Donald Trump until he attacks your friend, the world famous global pop star. There's a silliness about that I can't get over. I also can't get over the kind of amusing silliness, although, you know, I part of me is frankly sympathetic, but of Patrick Mahomes himself, the best player in the NFL, the most famous player in the NFL at this point, and how he doesn't want to slam his wife, you know, obviously, when he's asked about, well, your wife's supporting Donald Trump. He doesn't want to say he supports Donald Trump because, for goodness sakes, you know, he's on a team with that's gonna divide that team right in two. And of course, he's best buds with Travis Kelce, who dates Taylor Swift. Not to break any news, I'm sure people might have heard about that. But he also, I gotta say, like, I remember when Patrick Mahomes stepped up after George Floyd was killed, and he led players into making this video that was really good. That people should check out if they haven't seen, just Google it. Like, they called out Roger Goodell and the NFL for not doing enough to stand up against racism. And it forced Roger Goodell to say, we were wrong. That's the famous Roger Goodell, we were wrong speech that he gave over Zoom. And he only said he was wrong because you can't do to Patrick Mahomes what you did to Colin Kaepernick. You know, that there is no whiteballing Patrick Mahomes. So it put Roger Goodell, it checkmated Roger Goodell at that moment. So in that regard, it was like, ugh, Brittany Mahomes, what are you doing? You know, when she first endorsed. But then when she pulled it back because of the attack on Taylor Swift, I only had to laugh because it's like, oh, now it affects you because it affects Taylor Swift. Give me a break.
But, you know, the interesting part of it is that I saw an entire, and we talked about this before, the Caitlin Clark effect. And I've always said, you know, there's a certain demographic of Caitlin Clark supporters, diehard supporters, who are, as soon as she says something that they don't like, is going to turn on her, right? Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you know, even the thought that, because I think she liked a tweet that Taylor Swift did when she was talking about getting everybody to vote, something like that. Okay, so they jumped to conclusions and said that, okay, this might be an endorsement for Kamala Harris. And if you would have seen some of the vitriol on social media then towards Caitlin Clark, I was like, see? Oh, did you see some of it? I was like, wow. Like, they turned on her so quick. Like, I will never support you. I'm going to burn my jersey. I thought that, you know, I had your poster for my daughter, and now I just, you're a different. I was just like, wow. It's just amazing to me, even though we know this, but and it's not saying these are all Caitlin Clark fans, but there are a lot of fans of Caitlin Clark who are fans of hers for the wrong reasons, not because they appreciate the WNBA or they're fans of the league or they just love basketball. They're there for her whiteness. Mm-hmm. That's why they're there. That's why they're supporting, and they want to prop her up and use her as a symbol of whiteness. And if anything comes against that, then they will turn on a minute. And it's important to see how that plays out.
Caitlin Clark went from Carol Brady to Angela Davis with just a click.
A click, that's all.
Of her computer. A click. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And she was asked about it later. She looked absolutely bewildered and just said, I just support it when, you know, women step up and try to say something about the world. And it's like, okay, whatever. You know, you don't want to take a full stand now. But what she needs to understand, and which I think she is understanding, is that if you try to take even an inch away from some of these MAGA folks, the white supremacists, whatever, they will attack. And they will attack, and they will attack. They're merciless. So all she did was click like, and all of a sudden, it's like the entire persona that they had spent several years building up around her, it's like it dissipated just like that. And hopefully those so-called fans dissipate from the WNBA scene, because the WNBA is doing great right now, and on a lot of different fronts. And these fans, frankly, they do it no favors whatsoever, because they're not there for the hoops. They're there to see this particular player come in and humble black athletes that they want to see humbled.
100%.
And some of that, you have to say, it's not just about blackness. It's about the role that the WNBA has played politically in this country. I mean, from helping elect Raphael Warnock as Senator of Georgia to a host of issues that have taken place over the course of the last 10 years of the WNBA's existence. And so, like, this to them, Caitlin Clark was the ultimate clapback. Mm-hmm. And her desire to not play their game for just one click of the mouse, just one little click. And, you know, all of a sudden she's Shirley Chisholm. I mean, it was the craziest thing. But racism, as you and I have said, awesome, is it's evil, it's hateful, it's also irrational.
Yes.
You know, in so many ways, it forces people to operate with the wrong parts of their brain. It makes white people completely out of their darn minds. And this is where we are. This is where we are. But I thought that was really a smart observation on your part. The way Caitlin Clark, the mere fact that she stepped into the fray was too much for some people.
Oh, way too much. But we have Captain Pruitt on the line, so we could go right into her. And I'm so excited to talk to her, and I have so much respect for her. And it's interesting. She, you know, the Congressional Black Caucus just passed, and this was, you know, she sent me a picture of us when I first met her, and it was so long ago. I was like, wow, I can't believe we've known each other that long. But she is absolutely amazing. She began her law, just to let everybody know, she began her law enforcement career as an officer with the Montgomery County Police Department in Maryland. She served as the deputy director of the Internal Affairs Division and was later promoted to administrative lieutenant for the Office of Chief of Police, where she helped to oversee the department's budget and staff. She has worked as a call taker for the 911 Dispatch Center, an investigative sergeant, and a supervisor of the School Resource Officer Program. She's absolutely amazing. She retired from policing in 2020. And she is the past president of the Coalition of Black Police Officers in Montgomery County and served as the chairperson of the National Black Police Association. And now she has her organization called the Black Police Experience. And she has a event that's going on tonight. She's going to talk to us all about when she's talking about Black police officers who are in support of Kamala Harris. She's absolutely amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, Captain Sonya Pruitt. How are you doing, Ms. Pruitt?
How y'all doing? Can you hear me fine?
Loud and clear, Captain Pruitt.
Hey, you forgot something. I broke the concrete ceiling. Remember the first African American woman to make captain for my police department in almost 100 years.
That's right. That's right. I don't know how I forgot that one. Yes, and that's why I continue to call you Captain Pruitt, even though you're still retired. You will always be Captain Pruitt. So much respect for you. Tell everybody everything that you're doing, why you started the Black Police Officers Experience, and why you wanted to create an event that shows the support for Kamala Harris in this day and age.
Both great questions. I created the Black Police Experience because I was finding that even though we had Black police organizations, our voices were not elevated, even sometimes within the organization. So those same battles that we were fighting within our police departments with our peers or against our peers, I was finding those same barriers in Black police organizations. I hate to say it, but you know, the only way that you can fix a problem is by acknowledging it. And so, you know, and let me just say this, those organizations serve a purpose, but the purpose for which they were actually created, I think that they have veered away from. And so, you know, when we have organizations like the Fraternal Order of Police coming out and supporting that other guy, because I don't like calling his name, then where is the Black police organization that says, wait a minute, we're not down with you? So I'm answering both questions at one time. I created the Black Police Experience because I needed to be able, at least me, say what I wanted to say without someone hovering over me and telling me to be quiet. And then secondly, there are many, many officers of color, not just Black, LGBTQ, women who do not supporting the other guy. And so nobody asked us though. Like, you know, what is it, how do you speak for all of us? And so I thought I would give people a platform to express that and also allow the community to hear that we are out here standing for you. That is the purpose of public safety. That's the purpose of law enforcement. That's the purpose of the criminal justice system. And you need to hear directly from us, community, why, first of all, that we are standing and why we're standing and why we are supporting Kamala Harris for president.
Captain Pruitt, Dave Zirin here. Thank you so much for being on the show. And I live in Montgomery County. So for listeners out there who are new to the topic, new to the issue, new to some of these organizations that we're talking about, what is it about the Fraternal Order of Police that constantly puts them on the wrong side of all of these questions related to social justice? And do they really speak for the overwhelming majority of police officers in your experience?
So there are I don't remember how many police officers there are in this country, but I think that they speak for the, they speak for the system. And if you subscribe to what the system, the policing culture offers, then yes, they are speaking for the culture, which is why I feel like they are supporting these efforts on the other side, because they see something that's attractive. You know, policing was created so that a certain demographic, which were the enslaved, could be oppressed. And here we are hundreds of years later, and I think that for some people, that's still on the table. That's still the option. That's what would cause police officers out of their uniforms to go down to the Capitol on January 6th and attack other police officers, because they want a certain status quo. We want to keep things the way it is with this unequitable distribution of power. We want to be able to put our knees in on people's backs and our knees on their necks. That's what we want. And when you have the competitor, if you will, promising things like, I'm going to make sure that police officers get full immunity from prosecution. I'm going to elevate stop and frisk again. That, you know, those are the kinds of things that are attractive to some officers, obviously, which would make you go out there in public and say, we're going to support this guy for president.
Wow. And Etan, may I follow up real quick?
Go for it.
All right, because we go back and forth like tennis players in terms of asking questions. But I got to ask, you know, like Federer versus Nadal, except we're just rallying. We're not trying to defeat one another. But I have to ask you, just because you just said it, what was your reaction, just like in your heart and mind, when Donald Trump stood up there and said, you know, immunity, total immunity for police officers, mandatory stop and frisk, or you're not going to get federal dollars? As someone who has lived that life, what was your response when you heard him say that?
My heart dropped. I'm like, as though we have not already been in this country, marginalized communities have not been oppressed enough. And it just highlighted the fact that where's the humanity? Are Black people and poor people and the unhoused and LGBTQ and the Latino community, are these communities not seen as human? So I'm kind of answering my own question. It's kind of rhetorical. If you are standing for Project 2025, for instance, you are standing for an autocratic way of government where there are going to be many, many demographics that are going to continue to be oppressed. And there's only going to be perhaps white males and anyone who's in support of white males, who's also white, maybe white women, who are going to be in power. And I hate to, you know, have these conversations, but I think we need to be very real. If you are a student of history and you watched how Adolf Hitler, how he navigated and then manipulated populations almost to the destruction of the world, to me, then you should be able to know how quickly that can occur. We should be on the lookout for that. And I'm stumbling over my words because I'm very passionate about this. We are in danger. This is not a game. And one of the strongest the ability to take over groups of people, oppress them, marginalize them more, and even kill them starts with taking over the military and the police.
Wow. That's a serious history right there. No doubt about it.
Yeah, talk to me about the event tonight, Black Cops for Kamala, on the Zoom call that you're doing. Talk to me about that event.
So I had several police officers call me and say, did you see what the FOP did? Did you see what the National Association of Police Organizations did? They're endorsing Trump. And I said, yeah, I saw that. And they're like, well, what are we going to do? I said, whoa, I think you're calling me because you want me to do something. And honestly, I have been thinking about that. I think that it's just time for us to be more vocal about our stance as Black law enforcement and our allies. Our allies are not all Black, but we have lots of allies in the criminal justice system. And there are psychologists and sociologists and anthropologists who support this same mission. And so those are the people we invited to the call tonight. We want Black police officers also to know that they are supported. My greatest support inside the police department actually came from the community. And so we need the community to know that we are there for them. And we also need to start this conversation about what we are asking for from the next administration and how we're going to go about organizing to have our voices heard. Because right now it does not set well with me that, I don't want to call anybody out, but that Black police executives would go to the White House, sit there, cross their legs, drink bottles of water, put on some lipstick, smile real nice, and then come out and nothing occurs from that conversation. I think the White House needs to hear from people who are committed to actual change in this country and not committed to how it looks. How do I look because I went to the White House? That's not what we want.
Wow.
Let me just follow that up real quick. What Trump proposed was qualified immunity and complete protection from any type of prosecution. Pretty much, that's what he's saying that he wants. What is the alternative to that?
And when you ask what the alternative is, you mean what would be?
What would be a better system than what he proposed that he wants to have? You know, because what we talked last week, surrounding the entire Tyreek Hill situation. And how it was revealed that the police officer, his name escapes me right now, but that he had so many priors, he had so many times being suspended, so many different complaints of abusive force, of turning off his camera. There was just a whole list of different things. And so what type of system should be in place for police accountability? That's the opposite of what Trump is saying, that basically you can have carte blanche to do what you want to do.
Yes. Okay. Great question. So I think that's multi-leveled. And I think it starts with leadership. If you're not committed to holding police accountable, you won't. And we are finding that there are many, many police leaders and executives right now who will not hold police officers accountable. You can see what happens when we have an incident, which is pretty clear to everybody that was wrong, And then you'll have a police leader and the FOP or the union come out and say, well, they were justified. Well, you know, justified doesn't mean necessary. We're talking about lives here. So you need some committed leadership. Policies and training are already in place. But if you're not committed to using those policies and trainings, I mean, what's the point? So we need to hold leadership accountable, and we need to hold government entities accountable who are undergirding this misconduct. We have, like, in Montgomery County, for instance, not calling out the county executive, but just talking about levels of government. The county executive appoints the police chief. So if you're in a state where you have county executives who appoint the police chief, and when the police chief or the sheriff goes off, I'm sorry, when the police chief goes off kilter and does something wrong or does not support holding police officers accountable, then that leader should go, just like the officer should perhaps go, right? So we don't have commitment. But I tell you what we cannot have. We cannot have across the board immunity. It wouldn't even be qualified anymore. It would just be total chaos. Can you imagine? I feel that there are officers who become the police because they do hate a certain demographic or they hate a certain type of people. That would be incredibly dangerous.
No, indeed. And speaking of incredibly dangerous, Captain Pruitt, I have a question for you that I'm asking you to predict the future. I'm asking you for pure conjecture. I'm asking you for your opinion. I'm just asking you because you're a person of expertise who knows this world, but I'm not going to hold you, and no one's going to hold you to anything you say in the answer to this question. There, is that enough preamble before asking you this question?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go, because it's the one that's on my mind all the time. I'm even asking you this right now with a little bit of chill going up my neck here. All right. Let's move forward in the future. The election happens. Vice President Harris wins. Trump calls it a hoax. All of those things I think are going to happen. Trump calls upon his supporters to descend upon the Capitol on whatever day, I guess it'll still be January 6th, the certification is. Do police officers in this context, do you think they will protect the Constitution and the vote? Will we be seeing sections of police departments breaking and supporting a January 6th style operation, maybe even in uniform? Do we think it'll split? Will there be discipline? What do you see the police doing if there's another January 6th?
My feel is that there will be a lot of, there will be a split. Mm-hmm. There are going to be officers who are so committed to duty. They're, you know, they just like those officers at the Capitol.
Right, right.
They were committed to protecting the Capitol, and they did. But there's going to, well, you know, it's funny because one of the officers who was injured in that riot and insurrection was Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell. I had him speak at an event that I held, and he said to us that despite his critical injuries, he had to leave the force eventually. Despite his critical physical and mental injuries, he still had coworkers who told him he was lying about what happened. So you're going to have officers on both sides. And I tell you, I promise you, I don't know what it's going to look like, but it's going to be chaos, which I didn't fully answer that last question. I said it was multi-leveled, you know, what it could look like, the opposite of full immunity. That's why we're having the call tonight, because we need to start having those conversations, start organizing, start planning so that we can be forces for change so that we can educate. We need to educate not only other law enforcement, but we need to educate the community. And that community includes the White House, right? So that maybe we can avoid what could very potentially, you know what, I'm with you. I think that there's going to be some chaos after this election. I don't want to own that, but I'm afraid that that might be true considering where we are right now in this country, you know, the environment, the political environment. And so, yeah, I think that we're going to have to be watching out. This is a time when I'm glad I'm not the actual police anymore. I don't want to have to fight another police officer. I don't want to have to be afraid because, you know, I have a differing opinion of another officer. But I think that that's what's going to happen.
I want to ask you just real quick before we go, you know, police accountability. There's this notion out there that most police officers don't want police accountability, that they just want a qualified immunity. Would you think that's accurate, or would you say that there are a lot of police officers that understand that police accountability will be good for everyone involved?
I think that is both. I think that officers like, you know, I'm always the police, even though I'm not the police. But so I always speak as though I'm still the police. Officers like myself want accountability. Why? Because, you know, they're not doing anything wrong. They're not afraid of accountability. Okay, if I do something wrong, then let me know so I can correct it, right? Police officers who want to be able to not be held accountable will support this full immunity thing. And that's why, you know, it saddens me that the FOP and NAPO would come out and support this guy after the murder of George Floyd and everybody getting on their knees and putting their fists in the air. And now here it is a little bit more than 4 years later. And we are still talking about police reform and accountability. It is ridiculous.
Wow, Officer Pruitt. Captain Pruitt, excuse me. Any last words for our audience before we depart from each other?
I want the audience to know that there are police officers, deputy sheriffs, prosecutors, corrections officers. There are allies out there that support the community and all the efforts to keep our communities safe and alive. And so we're going to be having that conversation tonight. And here's something else. The community can, you know, one way the community can support is by supporting these police officers. When you know that there's an officer out there doing the right thing, I tell you, I would not have been promoted to captain had I not had the support of the community. They went to bat for me. Why? Because they knew that I had always stood for the community. So they were willing then to come and have my back and put so much pressure on the police department that they finally promoted me.
Wow.
We need the community, and the community needs the police. The Black police, the Latino police, the LGBTQI police, the women, everybody.
You know, Captain Pruitt, thank you so much for joining us here on The Collision. Very appreciated.
Always a pleasure.
Yes, thank you for everything you do. And it's so important because, you know, from the first time I met you, I told you I've never heard a police officer speak the way that you speak. And I think it's so important, the work that you're doing. So I just want to say much respect to you always.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Be well, Captain Pruitt.
All
wow.
right. Have a great day.
You too.
Etan, I swear, man, you're always batting 1,000 when it comes to these guests. Like, I've learned, you know, when we first started working together, you used to send me like a guest idea and I would do my due diligence and I would Google them and I would be like, oh, okay, that sounds like a good guest. I don't even do that anymore. I don't. It's like, oh, Etan thinks this is a good guest. Roll them on in.
She's amazing.
Well, we've just about hit the end of time here. Etan Thomas, any last words you want to have for our audience?
No, it's been great. It's been a great discussion as always. Always a pleasure.
Excellent. Well, for everybody out there listening, thank you so much for listening to The Collision. Shout out to Chuck Modiano, who's out and about. He'll be back next week. For everybody out there, please stay frosty. We are out of here.
It's going to be some stuff you're going to see that's going to make it hard to smile in the future. But through whatever you see, through all the rain and the pain, you got to keep your sense of humor. You got to be able to smile through all this.
Lifestyle, be closed caption, addicted to paper tractions. pictures of actions laid back in the midst of mashing. No fairy tales for this young black male. Some see me stranded in this land of hell, jail and sales, hustling and hardly think of culture or the repercussions while busting on backstabbing vultures, selling my soul for material wishes, fast cars and wishing I lived my life a legend, immortalized the bitches. Watch that tears, say your sympathy. My childhood years were spent burying my peers in the cemetery. Here's a message to the newborns waiting to breathe. If you believe, then you can achieve. Just look at me against all odds, though life is hard to carry on. Living in the projects, broke with no lights on. To all the seeds that follow me, protect your essence. Born with less, but you still precious. Just smile for me now.
Your thoughts slowly up on phrases I run, and I can walk you through the days that are done. I often wish that I could save everyone, but I'm a dreamer. Have you ever seen her? Who was strong in the game, overlooking his tomorrows, and it finally came. Look back on childhood for a reason, I'm still feeling the pain. Turning circles in my ninth grade, dealing too many houses in my local life, survived the strain. And a man without a focus life could drive me insane. Stuck inside a ghetto fantasy, hoping it changed. But when I focus on reality, we broken and chained. Had a dream of living wealthy and making it big. Over football, told to cook raw and take it and dig. And after all, my mama's thanking God for blessing a child. All my mama got to do now is collect it and smile. Smile.
Smile.
Speeds and unanswered questions keep us all stressed and curious. G, backstabbed and bleeding, crooked thoughts laced with learning, ducking straight shots, bullets be hot, they burning, inhaling. Visualize the flames, well I've been smothered by my own pain. Strange whispers, cowards conversate, so with the distance, taking pictures for the feds in desperate hopes they get us. Hit us all, give us plenty centuries, forgive my sins, since I ended many penitentiaries, the best revenge is. We military minded soldiers, busting shots blindly, trying to find Jehovah to help me. Somebody save me. Lost and crazy, scared to drop a seed, hoping I ain't curse my babies. Maybe now, feel me now, pitching my pain, embrace my words, make the world change. And still I smell.
Now, a moment of silence. Let us pray. And as you journey into outer space, may the angels help to lead the way. May the prayers that our families make shine upon your soul and keep it safe. And all the homies that have passed away, they're there to greet you as you pass the gates. And as you head to the tunnel's light, I hope it leads to eternal life. We say a prayer for the homie Pop.
Jazz and creative music fans. On Friday, September 27th, New York meets DC when pianist Matthew Shipp's trio performs on a double bill with Washington's own pianist and bandleader Janelle Gill and her trio at the NYU campus in downtown DC. Matthew Shipp will also stick around after the concert for a question and answer session with the audience, moderated by Bushmeat Sound System, aka Dr. Thomas Stanley. This concert on Friday, September 27th, is presented by Capital Bop. Tickets and more info can be found at capitalbop.com. That's CAPITALBOP.com.
Diverse City Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. The deadline for submissions is Friday, September 20th. Details and application information are available at www.diversecityfund.org. You can send questions to info@diversecityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and past recordings are accessible online at www.diversecityfund.org. The phone number for further information is 202-743-0130. That's 202-7-0. That's 202-743-0130.